Gun control. Can we have a civil, common sense, heart-to-heart talk about it today?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want you to imagine this with me. President of the United States, senior leaders, both Republican, Democrat, they are calling you in to sit down with a panel of experts and discuss the issue of guns, gun violence, gun control in America. They are looking to implement policies, whatever those policies might be, with the goal of saving more lives without infringing on our liberties at the same time. What would be your solution? What would be your answer? We're not talking about getting all emotional. We're not talking about arguing a political point. We're talking about a bipartisan gathering of experts sponsored equally by Republicans and Democrats. And they say, what's your input? That's what we're looking for today. This is Michael Brown. This is The Line of Fire. You know that I talk about things on this broadcast that burden me, that concern me, that interest me. I talk about things that I feel the Lord lays on my heart. I talk about things that I sense are of pressing interest and concern to us in America as a body or internationally. I talk about things in which I have expertise. You hear very little talk about finances on the show, about the economy on the show, because it's not an area of concern or expertise for me, as important as that area is. The same with guns and gun control and gun violence. It's an important subject. For many, it's a subject having to do with fundamental liberties. For many, it's a subject having to do with life and death. But it has not been a major focus for me, nor is it an area where I've had a very strong articulated viewpoint. So I am honestly opening this up for conversation. Please hear me. The number to call is 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. And I'm going to be checking in on our YouTube comments as well. Johan, do I read the chat? We will try to check in between me and my staff several times during the broadcast on the chat if it's relevant to what's going on the show. So if you post a comment relative to guns and gun control in the YouTube chat, we will try to interact with some of those comments as well. But please, please hear me. All right. I do not have a secret agenda. Dispel that from your mind.
Well, he's really on the left. Well, he's really on the right.
I do not have a secret agenda. My agenda is open and overt. It is not covert. It is not secret. My agenda is let us have a common sense conversation with the goal of advancing wisdom for the preservation of life without restricting our fundamental liberties, whatever those fundamental liberties are. I'm not even laying that out as a premise. But can we agree on a few things, all right? I just want to put this out. Can we agree on a few things? We each have our own background. I've never been a gun person. I've been born in New York City. My dad, senior lawyer in the New York Supreme Court, all right, liberal Jew. We were not a gun family. I was not a hunter. To this day, as much as I have friends who are hunters and one of our sons-in-law is a hunter, I could not think of a worse way to spend my time than sitting in a tree perch waiting for hours to shoot a deer. And for some, it's the highlight of the year, all right? So I'm just saying my own experience, I'm not a gun owner. I have no interest in guns. I have friends of mine on my own team that have concealed carry permits. When I speak in large churches, sometimes they'll want me to know about the security that they have in place. And this guy's a former Army Ranger, and this one's a former Navy SEAL, and they oversee the church security in some mega church. And I respect that and appreciate it. At the same time, I understand that every time there is another tragic shooting in America, more funerals, more agony, more pain, more lives torn up, more lives lost, that there is a standard liberal reaction that goes extreme one way and a standard conservative reaction that goes extreme another way. I share neither of those reactions, okay? So I want to be as practical as I can, and as down to earth as I can, and as common sense as I can. And I want to hear from you as well. Let me put out a few fundamental statements. We have over 300 million guns in America, I believe. You've got roughly a gun per person, if not a little higher than that. No one's going to take away guns from Americans. It's not going to happen, all right? We're not going to have a situation here in America where suddenly the government confiscates everybody's guns. It's not going to happen. Some years back in Australia, where there was concern about gun violence, the government offered to buy back guns from civilians, and they financed it with a one-time tax and got X number of millions of guns or thousands of guns, whatever it was, turned in, and they've had a decrease in gun violence since then. I don't see that happening in America. I'm just being candid. Nor do I think realistically anybody is proposing taking guns away. But I asked this question on Twitter. I posted this question. As a non-gun person myself, I'm interested to hear from all of you gun owners how you feel about this. Would you be willing to potentially wait a few more days to purchase a gun if more comprehensive background checks were required in order to keep guns out of the wrong people's hands? 80% said, of course. 10%, which I don't understand. 10% said, no way. 10% said, not sure. Now look, I cannot, I'm being candid with you, I cannot relate to the no way answer. You say, well, it's been proven these things don't work. No, my question is, if more comprehensive background checks were required in order to keep guns out of the hands of wrong people, if there was a way to make sure that people who were on medication for mental illness, emotional illness, whatever, were not able to get guns, if there were more comprehensive checks to weed out people or to have things resurface and databases that were more shared. I don't know what exists and what doesn't exist. Some would say, well, we've done everything we need to do on that. Well, I don't know what has been done, what hasn't been done. What I do know is my simple question should have gotten 100% response. Of course. You say, but oh man, I'm going hunting tomorrow. I need a gun. Well, then plan ahead, buddy. Plan ahead. All right. The bottom line is this. If we could do more comprehensive background checks and you had to wait a few days, every legitimate gun owner just had to wait a few days in order to get a gun, and it could potentially keep guns out of the wrong people's hands, wouldn't we all sign on in an instant? If someone said, yeah, but go to California, you got a 10-day waiting period for guns there. And what we need is security in the schools. That's what we need. Okay, fine. That's a perfectly valid response to say, of course, we'd wait a few days if that would help. But in places where this is already set up, it's not helping. Okay, fine. We can have that discussion. Mine was a theoretical question that should have received a 100% answer of everyone saying, yes, of course. If inconvenience myself a little bit, if going, look, how long does it take to get a driver's license? Come on. You know, you go, you have to take your written exam, then you have to drive, and then how long do you wait before you find out if you pass? I don't know what the system is now, but when I was a kid getting it, you know, you waited days, and if it was over a week, and the people would tell you, oh, the longer it is, that's a bad sign. Oh, the longer it is, it's a good sign. And it's life. It's driving a car. That's like a weapon, right? Other lives are at stake. It makes sense. And look, I don't want to inconvenience elderly people. I would not like to do that. I'm a young man myself. I may seem old to some of you, but I'm just 62, turn 63 next month, God willing. But I want to be respectful for the elderly, for someone that's 95 years old driving. But should we have some kind of test as people get older to make sure that it's safe for them to be on the road? What do statistics say? What's the best way to save lives? I think these are all fair questions to ask. Now look. Joel Pollack on Breitbart, so conservative website, Orthodox Jewish editor there, he said this: the mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida last week has caused shock and grief to the entire nation. Rightly so. And I'm glad that we're not just sweep this into the rug and just get back on with life. No, we can't. We can't just get back on with life after yet another tragic shooting. We have a problem in America. Okay, we have a problem with gun violence in America that we shouldn't have. No, we're not the most violent country in the world when it comes to gun violence, but we definitely have a problem. Is it fatherless kids? Is that the problem? Boys growing up without dads? Is it a mental illness problem? Is it our fascination with death? You know, constant violent movies and violent video games and celebrating, you know, mass violence and getting the guy's name out in the media. Now you have all these copycat killers, etc. Is it an issue of who can get guns? Is it an issue of what kinds of guns people can get? These are questions we need to ask, but let's acknowledge we have a problem. So Joel Pollack says the left is, as usual, demanding gun control, and it has listed several students from the school in its cause. And he says one can understand the desire to do something, anything, to prevent another terrible event, but once again, it's unclear what law or regulation would stop mass shootings. So he's representing the conservative side here. He said outlawing assault weapons. Well, automatic weapons are already largely illegal and are not involved in most mass shooting events. The last assault weapons ban did nothing to stop mass shooting events, including Columbine. Banning the AR-15, a single-pull, single-shot weapon, falsely described as an assault weapon. He said the Charleston shooter murdered his victims at the church with a handgun. Stephen Williford, the hero who stopped the Texas shooter last year, did so with an AR-15 rifle. Gun violence restraining orders, GRVOs. These rose in California after the Isla Vista shooting in 2015 to allow relatives of a troubled person to have police take their guns away. But these orders are only temporary. The Sandy Hook shooter's mother gave him his guns. And in Parkland, the parents who took the killer in had no idea he was so troubled. They told reporters that he had been showing improvement and they thought they had his guns locked away. Improved background checks. That might help. Although that solution depends on the ability of the bureaucracy to manage databases properly, which it failed to do in the case of the Texas shooter, who never should have been able to buy a gun. And just as in Parkland, many other mass shooters, including Islamic terrorists, have previously been reported to law enforcement or the FBI, but have either been ignored or have been left alone after a brief inquiry. As Attorney General Jeff Sessions told Breitbart News last week, there are signals and signs before these shootings that, if recognized, could lead to intervention and could stop these events from occurring. They're being missed. So what new gun laws or regulations would actually prevent mass shootings? He said there's one possibility, but the left will not allow us to try it, namely allowing teachers to carry guns. Okay, so I use that as a sample to say here are solutions that are being proposed. Here's a conservative saying this won't work. What will work is the thing the liberals won't do. Let's talk about it. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. What's your solution? What's your proposal? We definitely have a problem with gun violence in America. That, to me, is indisputable. The question is, what are the causes of it? What are the solutions? Someone posted on my Facebook page last week that when she went to school, I guess in the 50s, 60s, she said that guys would bring their rifles to school because they were going out hunting afterwards. And then she said they had a marksmanship team with ROTC, and they had the guns on campus locked up somewhere, and there was never an issue with gun violence. Now, on the one hand, I absolutely recognize that in that culture, in that setting, there was not a problem, and you didn't have an issue with the guys bringing rifles to school and going out hunting afterwards. At the same time, we have a problem today. So is the problem the guns, the access to the guns? Is the problem the people? Is the problem different society, different mindset? Let's just say we agreed that the problem was society has changed and you have more broken homes and you have more mental illness and you have more demonic activity, wherever you want to attribute. We have more problems with violent entertainment. And so whatever it is, all right, that we have this problem, we've taken God out of our schools. Say whatever you want to say. As of today, what do we do? Okay, we want to fix the larger problem We want to address the larger issues or problems in our society, which we don't deny. That's my main focus, the larger problems in the society. That's where my expertise would be. But is there something we need to do along the way? Should anyone be able to go into a store and get body armor, for example? You know, just what do you need for hunting? What do you need to protect your family? If the goal is you have to be more protected than the worst potential criminal out there, well, then get nuclear bombs or something. You know what I'm saying? Where does it stop? Where does it stop? Look, I understand that when I fly to Israel on El Al Airlines, you're not going to fly on safer airlines. Unfortunately, you know, man, you get hassled. And, you know, my last trip there, they didn't like some of my answers. And I got grilled and grilled and grilled at the airport. And finally, okay, I could go. And then the time before that, I was there with my assistant. And we got, I don't know, hour or two. It was however long it was. We got stopped. They separated us. They interviewed us, you know, went to websites to check, to verify stories that, you know, they weren't happy with things. But that's okay. In fact, I enjoy, they were wondering, why are you smiling? They asked me, why was I smiling? I said, because, you know, I really enjoy seeing you guys do your job. But you have to warn people, by the way, this is what happens. And yes, they use racial profiling because they're looking for certain potential people who could be terrorists. And, you know, one time in years past before my radical weight loss and change and all of that, I used to travel with a breathing machine. And long overseas flights, I'd bring it on the plane with me. I had a battery attachment for it. And then if I was going to lay down and sleep on the plane, you know, put the seat back as far as I could, I put the breathing machine on and put a blanket over my head and, you know, it helped me sleep much, much better. Well, they wouldn't let me bring it on the plane. I said, but I need it to sleep. They wouldn't let me bring it on the plane. Their security just wasn't happy with it. It looked like they knew what it was. But I said, well, I can't just put it in a suitcase because it's fragile. So they wrapped it, I mean, over and over and all this stuff, you know, to pack it properly to stick in my suitcase. You got to live with it. And then, of course, you know on every flight that they have armed marshals on. You don't know who they are. But on American flights, it'd be the same thing now, that there are armed marshals on the plane, and that's also helped cut down terrorism. So what if there were people who were licensed and trained in every school that were responsible, that met all the background checks, et cetera, and that they were trained to carry guns on campus? Would that help? I think it would certainly help. But the question again is, okay, Nicholas Cruz getting his guns. He never should have been able to because of his history. And even if he had guns, was able to get them earlier, once he was reported to the FBI earlier in January, that should have been enough. It was a bureaucratic error. You say, well, just enforcing our laws would do better. Yes, but probably some laws need some adjustments. 866-34-TRUTH. Going to the phones momentarily, there is a Colorado State Representative, Columbine survivor, that he says we've got to end gun-free zones. That, you know, Chicago, city of Chicago is real strict with gun control laws. And what do you have there? You have a horrific number of homicides. You know, you say, oh, so we need more guns in there. Is that going to do it? Some people would say yes, that the responsible people have guns to defend themselves or that will deter violence. The people coming in with guns are coming in because they know they're gun-free zones. I am not trying to argue a specific case here. I'm simply saying here's something else that's been put forward by a Columbine survivor. There is an article, that I saw on CNN, how U.S. gun culture compares with the world, and they lay it out in five charts. The first chart indicates how Americans own nearly half, 48% of the estimated 650 million civilian-owned guns worldwide. Then it says Americans own more guns per capita than residents of any other country, Yemen being behind us, and then Switzerland, that's a surprise, being number three, Finland, number four. You don't associate those countries at all with gun violence. I'm talking about Switzerland and Finland. The U.S. makes up less than 5% of the world's population, but holds 31% of global mass shooters. So with that being so much higher, then that would point to not just guns being the problem, but our culture being part of the problem. The Daily Wire, by the way, has said that they're no longer going to publish names, photos of shooters. They do not want to draw attention to them, and they do not want to make the people into heroes or celebrities, I should say. and they do not want to encourage others to be copycat killers. Gun homicide rates are 25.2 times higher in the U.S. than in other high-income countries. So basically, you're looking at gun-related deaths in high-income countries per 1 million people as of 2010, and homicides in South Korea, Japan are virtually zero. UK almost zero. Netherlands, 2-3%. I mean, very, very, very low percentages. And then you get to America when you scroll down, and we're at a total of 66 per million. Is that it? And it's, 66 suicides, 36 homicides per million. So in any case, you look at this and say, okay, we definitely have a problem. The question is, what's the root of the problem? How do we fix the problem? And let me just switch screens here and go over to our call. So we'll start in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Wade, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I just had 2 points I wanted to make. One is that perhaps your 10% who don't want to wait 4 days for the background check, maybe that's because they are the wrong people whose hands we're trying to keep the guns out of.
That's a possibility. I mean, I hate to think there are that many following me on Twitter, but that's a valid possibility, sir. Absolutely.
The main thing I wanted to suggest, though, is that we're looking in the wrong place for answers, and that's why we've not got our prospects for solving this are bleak. Because it seems reasonable to me that we should start by finding out what's causing these young people to want to shoot each other. And that, of course, that's going to take us into the cleaning up the entertainment industry, cleaning up the internet, bringing back family values, morality, and all those things that are universally taboo in our discourse.
Yeah. Yeah. In other words, go ahead.
It's not about guns. It's about depraved minds.
Right. Right.
And it's not a mental health problem because it's about culture and not about individual minds.
Right. Yeah, and let me just jump in and say a couple things quickly. One is, because of the culture of today and the depravity of today, do we need to do anything different with our gun laws because of that? That's one question. Two, yes, we must address the larger issues. And three, there are some people who are legitimately mentally ill. In other words, there is a physical malfunction in the brain, which with medication can be somewhat modified. But evil is evil. In other words, there are plenty of people who do what they do because they're evil and because they're wicked. And yes, our culture is the biggest culprit. We must address the larger issues. At the moment, is there something else we need to do as well? Thank you, sir, for weighing in. Let's go to Tony in Ogden, Utah. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
Good. I want to talk about the teachers and the staff having guns.
Yeah.
School, I think they should, because the fact that they're in the line of fire, too, you know, the brave teachers that just died recently. I was a helicopter door gunner in Vietnam, so I know there are times when you have to make sure you hit your target, even though you're shooting between things, and that's the spot they'll be in. If the shooter is right with a bunch of kids, they got to make sure that they can hit their target. So I think if they should have guns, but they should also be certified, I guess the word would be expert, to make sure they hit their target, even if they have to shoot. Because if you don't knock down your target that first moment, they're still going to get somebody else besides you. And that's my thought on the whole school and teacher thing. And we really don't need semi-automatics. You can do the same thing, prick yourself with a shotgun and a pistol, as to say.
Got it. And, yeah, I was just listening to you. I was just waiting. Tell you what, we got a break. But thanks for weighing in. Thanks for your service for our country. And, yes, yeah, so is that part of the immediate solution? While we address the larger issues and how guns are getting to certain people's hands, an immediate solution, because of the depravity of the culture, that instead of just having gun-free zones, you have security or people on premise who are certified, licensed, and even expert. We'll be right back.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, if we just kind of go on with life while families are still mourning in Florida after the last school shooting, if we just kind of go on with life, we're missing the point that we have a massive problem with violence, with gun violence in America. The question is, what's the cause of it? How do we address it? How do we fix it? I just asked a question on Facebook that I'd previously asked on Twitter. And I said this, as a non-gun person myself, I'm interested to hear how all of you gun owners feel about this. Would you be willing to potentially wait a few more days to purchase a gun if more comprehensive background checks were required in order to keep guns out of the wrong people's hands? And thus far, the first couple hundred responses, I just posted it minutes ago, 81% said, of course, 19% said, no way. One gentleman said, I'm in California. We wait 10 days already, even if you have 2, 3, 10 other firearms. So waiting 10 days is not going to make a difference. Now I'm looking at an article that's talking about Japan. Japan has a population of about 127 million people, and they have rarely more than 10 shooting deaths total in a year. And if you want to own a gun in Japan, you must attend an all-day class, pass a written test, achieve at least 95% accuracy during a shooting range test. Then you have to pass a mental health evaluation at a hospital, as well as a background check, in which the government digs into any criminal records or ties and interviews friends, family members. Then you can buy only shotguns and air rifles, no handguns, and must retake the class in the initial exam every 3 years. We have almost no gun violence there. But would America even think of living with a system like that? So I want to talk to my dear friend James Robison about this. And James, I know you're a lifelong hunter and in that sense a gun owner. But I know that more than being a conservative or being a member of the NRA or voting for the Republican Party, you are someone who loves people, whose heart breaks. You shed more tears than almost anybody I know over human pain. So you, sir, as you're looking at the suffering, the pain, people burying their dead, the outcry for the president to do something, I genuinely want to hear, what do you have to say at a time like this? How do we address the problem? Are we looking for solutions in the wrong place?
Well, let me first of all say that I was good to be with you and appreciate what you're doing. And I want to correct something. I don't vote Republican. I vote principle. And I encourage all parties and participants and candidates and voters to vote principles and to try to get all the parties to move toward a biblical worldview, because if we change God's word or we deny it or cast it aside, it's not an idle word, and it's just costly when we do so, irrefutably, historically confirmed, costly. Mm-hmm. I am a member of the NRA. I believe, as I know through Richmond Hunters, who are the reason we still have a lot of wildlife that people can see and enjoy, because they're the greatest friends. I've said many times, if you like animals, you should love sportsman hunting. And that is simply a fact. That would go for Ducks Unlimited and all the migratory birds that people still enjoy. The NRA used to be the most radical group in the country, determined to find every way to keep weapons out of the hands of any unstable or potentially dangerous person. And I can assure you that all that I know, and if I knew anyone who didn't feel that way, they would catch it from me full blast. They do not want anyone to have a firearm or a deadly weapon that is unstable or dangerous. And I also believe they'd be the first ones to try to find ways to protect our children in the school. If it took voluntary programs, if it took training programs, if it took people giving their time to be there to protect the schools, I think that there's a lot that can be done to not just have anyone walking in. How do you have someone walk in a school with a long gun, with a dangerous weapon, and not somebody to test it? It is insane that a nation as advanced as ours cannot protect our precious school children. And I weep with those who are weeping. We lost a 40-year-old daughter to cancer. Broke our heart. Devastated. I can't imagine losing these little teenage kids, as well as the adults that were lost also to pain. I'm telling you, and I know you know this, if we will sit down together, individuals made in the image of God who know what it is to love God and love your neighbor can find a way to deal with this. The major problem we've got is we don't enforce the laws that are on the book. That's a major problem. And I think if we could have a really accurate system of checks and balances, everyone in this country would be for it, including every member of the NRA. The problem is, once you start giving an inch to the federal government, they take a mile. Once they begin to put you in some form of bondage, then you're a real dedicated, honest, law-abiding citizen, and you begin to take away that person's freedom. I mean, there's something that just rises up in a person's heart that is also in the heart of God, who set his people free, who led Israel out of bondage into a land that flowed with milk and honey. God wants to bless his children. He wants to keep us safe. And he's told us that keeping his law is one of the best ways to stay safe, and enforcing the law and not changing the law or disregarding the law or saying the Ten Commandments do not matter. When you do that, you have literally told reason and civility to get out of the room. And you're going to have nothing but tension and continual infighting. So we really do need to sit down and talk, and we can get this thing settled, and the NRA will help lead the pack. We can protect our schools. There are so many ways to do it, just like we can protect our borders, and we must. This business of just letting anybody in, Michael, and having absolutely no restraint is as foolish as you leaving your windows open and your doors unlocked when you've got dangerous people in the community, including pedophiles. You don't do that unless insanity rules. So with all the forcefulness I can say it with, we can deal with this problem. Now, let's stop and think. The FBI failed again. Bureaucratic agencies tend to collapse under their own weight of a lifetime appointment. They do not really do the job they were created to do. Oftentimes, they never should have been created in the first place. But once you're entrenched in a system, you can easily become lax. You can become, as many have, very much, let's say, focused on a particular political view that may not be healthy. And we even had 9/11 happen when it was pure insanity that people training people to fly weren't disturbed about somebody that didn't care how to land an airplane. All they wanted to do was know how to point it somewhere. So we are not allowing wisdom and discernment to prevail in this country. And it's because we've asked God to get out. Too often.
Yeah.
Too often we've done that.
Yeah, and there's no question. And by the way, James, we're just having a problem with the connection. We're just going to call again to see if we can get a better connection. So Howie's just going to talk to you off the air for a moment, because the call is somewhat muffled, and I don't want to miss what you have to say. But what I'm saying is the same thing that James is saying. So Howard, if you can just check to see if we can improve the connection, that would be great. What I'm saying is the exact same thing, that we've got to be able to sit down and talk and not make this political. Look, I think it's totally wrong when people are furious with President Trump and saying, do something, stop it, this is your fault. Well, the shooting that took place in Florida is not President Trump's fault. At the same time, it grieves me when he tweets about the FBI and where they were so busy looking at Russia that they didn't focus on this, and now it's about him. Both of those responses are wrong to me. Let's not politicize this either way. That's my appeal. Let's talk to each other and try to better understand each other, and then say, okay, can we put our heads together and come up with life-saving solutions. Don't have the reaction, the gut-level reaction, either way. Don't. Let's talk. Would it be a good idea to have better security in the schools? Is that something that we can do? Is there a way that we can get past the political divisions. And I want to go to your calls in a moment, 866-34-TRUTH. But, James, hopefully we cleared up our connection. Just to ask this last question. It seems that we make everything political and that there is a right and a left reaction immediately, and we never get to that table of wisdom where we can sit and talk together. What must we do? What kind of attitude do we have to be able to sit together as American citizens and say, okay, we have a problem. How can we solve this together instead of, well, this is a victory for the Republicans, this is a victory for the Democrats, well, this is for Trump, this is for Obama. How do we grow up and get past that?
Well, I think you come back to the Word of God and acknowledge that we do have a reliable standard. There are principles that are absolutely, let's say, not only sustainable and important, but quite frankly, the consequences of throwing them aside are irrefutable, written and recorded in history. And so we're going to have to sit down together. And the thing that I'm seeing is that when you get people that are unreasonable, they are actually taking the basic tenets of God's word and changing it into a lie or totally ignoring it. And the devastating results that come when you put anything before God, including Caesar or Pharaoh or the government, or some other source for direction and for wisdom, you are in serious trouble. Look at the mockery this week that a major network tolerates on a show that was started by a very famous news person in The View. And they make fun of the entire Christian world by implying the possibility of Jesus actually talking to the sheep who he says can hear his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And the word of God is proceeding from his mouth. So once you say those things are not true, then you have invited the father of lies to lead the conversation. And Dr. Brown, the father of lies, who is also a murderer, is directing too many conversations today and is contributing to the confusion, the dissension, the division, and the outright hatred, because the liar wants to destroy everything that doesn't walk in step with his lies. And the those who are dedicated to evil, unlike people who are in the church who are dedicated to God, at least they say, they are walking lockstep in harmony with the deceiver's will. And it leads to death and destruction, and dissension and division is right there preceding all of it. Whereas the church has bought the lie that if it affects culture, if it has been pulled into the political arena, get out of that arena. That is one of the most foolish things the people of God have ever done. That's just like telling a shepherd to stop looking after the sheep because the wolves are increasing. How insane is that thought process?
We're
going to have to get the Church of Jesus Christ to stand up together and say enough is enough.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, a few very important announcements, and then back to your calls. You can pre-order a signed, numbered, collector's edition copy of the first printing of Playing with Holy Fire, A Wake-Up Call to the Charismatic Pentecostal Church. Already yesterday on Amazon, it jumped to the number one new release in Pentecostal Charismatic Theology. So I encourage you to go ahead and go to our website, askdrbrown.org. You'll find it right on the homepage. Again, this is a signed, numbered copy from the first printing. And as soon as we get them, we'll send them to you, which means you may even get them a little bit before the April 3rd release date. That's number one. And number two, we're going to Israel February 1st through 10th of 2019. This will be the trip of a lifetime. Sign up today also at our website. Number three, unless there's some major news that turns the direction of the show tomorrow, I want to get into something really interesting and show you where charismatics fail and non-charismatics fail. Show you strengths of each side. Show you weaknesses of each side. I think you'll find it really eye-opening. And, of course, we'll take your calls as well. And then in that light, yesterday we got some great calls. We had a non-charismatic call-in day yesterday. Got some great calls, some fine questions I've been interacting with Phil Johnson, a right-hand man to Pastor John MacArthur, about a presentation he gave a few years ago. He asked me to interact with it publicly because I had not done so in a comprehensive way. We started with part one last week. I'm probably going to get into part two tomorrow. These are going to be eye-opening broadcasts, and the videos are there on our Ask Dr. Brown YouTube channel. James Robison mentioned on The View Joy Behar mocking Vice President Pence as if he's mentally ill, thinking that Jesus speaks to us today. And I don't remember Mike Pence going around saying, yeah, Jesus just told me this. Yeah, the Lord just told me. I don't think of him using that language all the time. In any case, it's a mockery of our faith is what it is. I wrote about it on the stream. Check out my article there in The Faith of Mike Pence. Also on the slaughter of Christians in Nigeria at the stream, stream.org. All right. With that, we go back to the phone, starting in Ohio. David, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, just real quick, I'm going to be doing some videos on this at the end of this month. I've had guns for a long time. My boy was 4 years old. He was shooting guns. This is what's going to happen. If you take away his AR-15, then you're going to take away all the guns. A Glock, I can shoot 100 rounds through a Glock. I can shoot a Ruger 22. I can shoot 100 rounds through that. There's a lot of guns that can have high-capacity clips. I think we need security in schools, and I think we need to see people's hearts change by the power and the presence of the Holy Ghost and prayer. That's what's going to make the difference.
So, sir, if you had to come up with an immediate solution while we work long-term to change people's hearts, your immediate solution is more security in our schools?
And number one, prayer. And number two, more security in our schools.
Got it. Yeah, of course we pray, and of course we seek to change hearts. But if we had to do something on an immediate legislative level, that would be your solution, more security in our schools. Thank you, sir, for calling. And thank you for getting right to the point. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Austin, Texas. Nicole, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Well, I have a question because Jesus talked about the solution when he was talking about the last days, and he says that those that endure to the end is the solution. And so I guess that's my question, because Jesus is speaking out, you know, all these things that are happening today, the wars, the rumors of wars. Are we supposed to stop that as Christians because he told us it was going to happen? And if he says enduring means to suffer patiently, to bear without resistance, to tolerate, I guess that's my question. Can we be yoked with a world that doesn't follow God?
Yeah, so there's a larger question and then a specific. So the larger question has to do with last days and enduring to the end. We've been in the last days since Jesus died and rose from the dead. When Peter preached at Pentecost, he referred to the outpouring that they were experiencing as taking place in these last days. And that's the consistent testimony of New Testament writers, that we're living in the last days, even the last hour. That's since Jesus died and rose from the dead until today. And during that time, this time period, there's great tribulation, there's great deception, and there's great victory, there's great outpouring. As far as enduring to the end, it's talking about saying no to the seduction of sin that would pull us away, saying no to the seduction of apostasy that would pull us away, saying no to the pressure of persecution that would pull us away. It's not saying don't try to change laws in a positive way. It's not saying if you see injustice, don't address it. The early Christians were active in saving lives, the lives of abandoned babies being the most prominent, and then advocating for justice and equity. It was Christians who led the war against slavery, while there are other Christians on the wrong side of that, Christians who led the war against slave trade and slavery, Christians on the front line of the pro-life movement. And then in whatever country we live, we are to be submitted citizens and work for the best of the country and serve that country unless the country demands that we disobey God. So in this context, I don't think we just sit back and let people be slaughtered unnecessarily. And I think that we do what we can to work across the government and whatever we can do and holistically address the problems to say, what can we do to reduce the number of gun fatalities in America? It should be something we all agree we want to see happen. Hey, thank you for asking. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Mo in Walnut Cove. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Shalom, Dr. Brown.
Shalom.
I just don't understand why we can go to the airport and be scanned, touched, all of our belongings gone through before we get on the plane, but yet in the school, you could just walk in there nonchalant.
So do you think then, now there are schools, there are certain places where you do have to go through metal detectors to get in, and that's been for quite a while. And by the way, if you go into a mall in Israel and you got a backpack, that backpack is going to be expected. And, you know, you just, it's not as stringent as security at an airport in the States, but it's closer to that than just walking into a mall here in America. It's sadly necessary there. But are you saying then that would be the next step that we need to take, that you have metal detectors in schools and that all it's a hassle? You hate it, but everyone has to walk through a metal detector to get in, to put their cell phone in a tray and put their backpack in a tray and have it go through metal detectors. That's something that is as much of a hassle as it is. It's going to, like, it saves lives on the airport and we live with it. Then we have to do the same in our schools.
Well, in a way, yes. I mean, I forget which football coach said it, but offense wins games, but defense wins championships.
Yeah. Got it. So it's not something that we'd like to countenance, but until the culture changes, the larger culture changes and we address other issues, is this the kind of thing we need to do? Then, of course, we've had church shootings. Do we do the same thing in church services? And I mean, these are fair questions to ask, are they not? Thank you, sir, for raising this. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Dan in Raleigh, North Carolina. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, hi, Dr. Brown.
Hey,
I'm kind of on the progressive side, not quite liberal, but you know, I listen to your show because I think it's good for me, and I really come to respect you. I think you are truly a man of God, and I do appreciate your call for dealing with this in a non partisan way. I mean, this is something that Christians should be able to come together on. I very much am a man of God. And one thing I hear all the time from conservatives that kind of bothers me, and I've heard a couple of times today, is that, you know, if you let the government ban any guns, they're going to come and take all of your guns. And, you know, the Bible demands that we deal with each other in a spirit of truth. And, you know, that's never been proposed. No one has ever proposed taking away everyone's guns. And I just wonder what you think of that.
Well, first, thanks for the kind words. And obviously, if we're followers of Jesus, we're trying to align ourselves with God's side and God's truth. And look, I see liberal or progressive attitudes toward war, towards violence, that to me you could make a good biblical case for. And then I see conservative responses to war and violence that you can make a good biblical case for. In other words, often there are arguments on each side. And I used to like, for the few times I watched Hannity and Combs, that they could argue out both sides. I kind of like that, because whichever side you're on, it was going to force you to hear the other side and challenge your thinking. And it wasn't a slam dunk in every case. But what I understand people are saying is this. Yeah, some are overreacting. But like James Robertson just said, you give the government an inch and they take a mile. And just like we've seen gay activism go inch by inch, whereas we're telling people in advance, here are the miles it's going to be going. You know, it's not just incremental, it's massive, it's societal change. The same thing, that there are people on the left that really do have some very radical ideas. You know, just like a Bernie Sanders was an out-and-out socialist when it comes to American economy. So that's what I think is the valid concern. I said at the outset of the show, no, nobody's talking about taking away guns from America. It's just, why? Because it can't happen. It's not going to happen. America is just not going to give up their guns. That's a reality. I mean, unless you have some unexpected thing and the whole world comes under the sway of the Antichrist. But you know what I'm saying? It's just, it's not going to happen. But people are saying, once you open the door a little bit more to the government, more bureaucracy, more control, the government's going to just ask for this one inch, but this one inch now becomes the wedge in the door for the 1 mile, the 5 miles, and 10 miles. I think that's the valid concern. So if you can get past that initial knee-jerk reaction and look at the larger concern, that's what I see as valid. All right, friends, back with you tomorrow.